I recently had a friend of mine ask me, does animal fat really cause inflammation? She was reading a pop culture book on gut health, and in this book, it was really hammering away at animal fat and animal meat being major inflammation-causing foods. Since she was wondering this, I figured you might be too. So I'm dedicating an entire episode to answering if animal fat and meat are inflammatory, and if so, when and under what circumstances can you eat meat and fat without it causing inflammation? If you want to know exactly which foods to eat to feel your best or are struggling with chronic inflammation in your body, then this episode is for you. Hey friend, welcome to the Better Belly Podcast. If you're currently trying endless supplements, doctor visits, and diet changes to heal your mystery symptoms, you are in the right place. We're here to solve the real root causes behind your gut, hormones, skin, sleep, and brain concerns. Literally anything and everything in your body. My name is Allison Jordan. I'm a functional medicine practitioner that has supported over 150 clients just like you to heal problems that no one has been able to fix. You don't need a perfect diet or a random supplement you found on Instagram to heal. You need a proven system that heals your whole body from the inside out. That's what I'm here to share with you, episode by episode. It's time to make health easy again. And just as a reminder, this information is not meant to diagnose, manage, or treat disease. Always consult with your own health practitioner before you make any changes to your health. All right, guys. So today's episode is a really great example of how current culture is loving to villainize food on the whole, like a whole category of food. I don't know, just because maybe it seems easier. Maybe it seems it's so dramatic that it gets more views and likes and people want to talk about it. And maybe the people who are talking about villainizing a whole food group are really passionate about what they care about. But really what I find is where the best health practitioners are living at is that even if they really find that a certain diet is helpful, they understand it's not helpful for everyone. And so today's episode, the number one factor you're going to run into as I'm talking is the fact that I'm not going to say everybody should eat meat and no one should eat meat. And unfortunately, that's what this book was saying to my friend. And this is stuff that you're coming across as you're scrolling through Instagram, talking to friends, trying to find a book to read on how to get healthier. So I want to provide to you today actual, tangible, scientific facts, nuggets that help ground you in better understanding how to put fat and animal fat and meat into your diet, or how to not put it in there, understand if you're eating it, why maybe you don't feel the best, or just better understanding how its role and its function in your specific life, not somebody else's, and not just following some book that's like gonna villainize an entire food group. So I immediately told my friend, just to jump off what I shared in the intro, that I don't know what pop culture book you're reading on gut health, but it immediately makes me suspicious of the entire book because it villainized one food group. It was like animal fat. It particularly was really hammering on animal fat, though it didn't have lots of nice things to say on animal meat, and it was just like, this is all bad. And I have had people had amazing healing with animal fat being a part of their diet and even being a key part of what they were using to heal. And so it's a lot more nuanced why animal fat may be helpful or not helpful. And before I even jump into some of those more scientific facts that's going to be applicable to you, I even want to ground us in, where did this question and topic, or even just doubt, right? Where did all this doubt around if animal meat and fat are good for us come from? So there's probably somewhere in the back of your brain you've heard red meat is bad for you. And some research found that when people ate red meat, it made their cholesterol skyrocket. It's honestly around the same time period, the same decades where people also research was done on salt is bad for you. When you eat salt, your blood pressure goes up. both of these pieces of research, and it wasn't just one piece of research, but there were people doing research in that time period. They were not very well done. So one of the problems in the whole like red meat increases your cholesterol research, one of the problems in it is that they were not having, it wasn't like they were eating red meat and then they were eating vegetables and whole grains, right? They were eating red meat and then they were eating French fries from McDonald's. They weren't controlling any other factor of these people's diets. And then they were blaming it all on red meat. This would be like giving someone an extremely unhealthy diet and then picking one thing out of it to say like, that is the one problem. You know, you're eating a McDonald's burger with a, you know, McDonald's big ice cream. What are they? They're not called smoothies, milkshakes. You're being given this huge thing of a milkshake, which doesn't even have real milk in it. And then you're watching this person's cholesterol is going up and then you're blaming the red meat. The reason they typically blame red meat is they say that meat has cholesterol in it. Well, fun fact, our bodies don't get cholesterol from the food we eat. We make our own cholesterol and our body pretty much ignores most of the cholesterol we get in dietary form, meaning the what food you're putting into our body. Now, what we do get out of our diet is triglycerides. So if your triglycerides are high in a lipid panel, which is how your doctor will evaluate when he's looking at like cholesterol, he's looking at cholesterol total, LDL, HDL, and triglycerides tend to get grouped in there. Triglycerides are actually absorbed through your diet. So if that's high or low, we do want to think about diet. But cholesterol mainly is regulated by your liver. And so if cholesterol is high, especially if it's bad cholesterol, we don't want to be thinking about diet only, at least. We want to be thinking about your liver. What is stressing out your liver? Maybe diet's a part of it, but what else could be stressing out your liver? Maybe alcohol, maybe not. Maybe it's hidden pathogens. Maybe it's other food sensitivities that you have. Maybe it's nutrient deficiencies. Maybe it's stress, like psychological stress. All these things can be super stressful. Birth control is super stressful to the liver. So there's a lot of things that can stress your liver and elevate your cholesterol that is not red meat. And again, the actual research done on this did not control for other dietary factors. It was just saying if they ate a lot of red meat, what happened? And they definitely weren't even evaluating what was the quality of the red meat. Was the red meat grass-fed, right? How much red meat were they eating? Were they eating, you know, kind of obese quantities, or was it a normal quantity, a quantity you would want to have for the person's size and weight and activity level? They weren't controlling for any factors like that. So it's really bad research. Honestly, I want to have a whole episode on salt. It will be coming up this year, but I don't want to dive too deep into it, but similarly, salt got bad rap from bad research where they said people were eating these high salt diets, but they weren't controlling for other factors. Was it a lot of salt on top of steamed broccoli? Was it a lot of salt on top of, I don't know, things that salt might be on that's healthy food, like a organic potato? Was it lots of salt? You know, what were the other factors involved with this salt and then high blood pressure? They weren't controlling for them. And that's really bad research, where you want to make sure that like all the factors as much as possible are controlled other than the one variable you're testing for. And that really wasn't done in the salt research either. So this is where we come into this conversation and everyone's so confused. And I just want to hopefully make this a little bit more clear. So I want to start off with a little bit on the history of eating meat. And one thing I like to say when I talk about people, like if they're like, should I eat meat or not? I have some clients who genuinely like, I don't feel good when I eat meat. And I believe them. Like, great. We want to be asking some questions. Are you biologically coming from a history, an ancestral history, where maybe your ancestors didn't eat a lot of meat? That might be certain. It's going to be typically regions closer to the equator, because the further you get from the equator, you're going to get more cultures like the Vikings. I always like to pick on them, right? Where they can't grow. Like they can't grow vegetables year round. And so what you can eat year round is meat. It doesn't matter how cold it is. That animal, that sheep has got a bunch of wool on it and it's staying alive. Unlike, you know, the corn or the broccoli or the spinach you're trying to grow is not going to grow in sub-zero weather, or sub 32 for that matter. So if we're talking Fahrenheit, so you want to, maybe you come from a culture that grew up closer to the equator and maybe your ancestors ate a lot more vegetables. Indian cultures, certain Chinese cultures, Filipino cultures, certain African cultures, Central American, some of them, right? There might be more plant-based diets that your cells are used to eating, and our bodies, we know that they will shift how they're organized and how they function. It's called epigenetics, based on the environment they're in and the toxins they're exposed to or not exposed to, the weather they're exposed to or not exposed to. I think that there can be some genetic stuff just baseline. And interestingly enough, Americans in general, we're strong mutts, right? Like maybe your mom is Hispanic, Latino, Mexican. Like my husband, he's half Mexican, half Filipino. My daughter is 25% Mexican, 25% Filipino, and 50% my mutt heritage, which is like UK, kind of the Welsh sort of stuff coming from Europe. And so she might pick up genes, a stronger gene from my husband or from me that prefers different foods. So we could have four kids and one of our kids might thrive on a different type of diet than another simply because of our ancestry and whatever comes through genetic expression. But let's say a client tells me, I don't feel good when I eat meat. I don't automatically assume they have some ancestry that, you know, means they're just going to thrive off of plants. Honestly, the first thing, every single time, the first thing I want to ask is, and actually start to explore is, do they have low digestive enzymes? Point blank, do they have low digestive enzymes? And what do I mean by that? I mean stomach acid, bile out of the liver and gallbladder, and pancreatic enzymes. If one or multiple of these are low, then when they put in really high density food, which is going to be fat and especially not just protein, though, whether it's plant or meat protein is more dense, but especially meat protein. So fat, whether it's plant or animal based, and then protein, especially meat protein, you're not going to feel well eating those things if you have low digestive enzymes. And this is something that across the board, almost every single client I've ever worked with, I mean, I don't have exact numbers, but I'd be estimating 90 to 95% of clients that I work with, when they come to me and they say, I don't feel good when I eat, I get bloating, I have a lot of, you know, I have IBS, I have acid reflux, I have these things that no diet can improve, or I sort of improve, but it doesn't like fully go away. Low digestive enzymes are a part of it because you can't break down that food. And then the food, say fat, let's say it's animal meat, even specifically, if it's animal meat and it comes through the stomach and the stomach acid isn't very high, it's not getting broken down, comes through the first section of the small intestine, there's not enough bile, there's not enough pancreatic enzymes. By the time it hits your bacteria and the later portions of the small and large intestine, the bacteria is like, this meat is not broken down. It's basically not cooked, right? And it's going to have to do all those jobs for you. It slows down your digestion. It's going to honestly lead you to have usually diarrhea or constipation because your body doesn't know what to do with this undigested food. Then you'll get bloating because your bacteria have to do the jobs that those digestive enzymes should have been doing. And there is no amount of digestive enzyme supplements you can take to really fully replace what your body should be doing. Interestingly enough, if you take stomach acid as an example, one stomach acid pill, so there's like an average number of milligrams, average, that like a betaine HCl, hydrochloric acid pill, is going to have in it. There's going to be an average, right? On average, it's about 1/10 of what your stomach needs to digest an average-sized meal. 1/10, right? Most people are going to be taking 2 to 3 because we're basically having to guess how much your body's making. Like, if you aren't making enough stomach acid, you're probably making some, but are you making 0%? Are you making 20%? And so most people, if you're a doctor or holistic practitioner or nutritionist, whoever's recommending these things to you, or maybe just pulled a bottle off the shelf, the dosing on the bottle is going to be significantly lower than what your body would actually create in a perfect environment, because they don't know how much you need. So don't go like 10xing how much digestive enzymes you're taking. The actual solution is to heal your body's ability to make digestive enzymes so you don't need to rely on supplements, so you actually have the right amount of digestive enzymes when you eat, and then you feel better. This, like, 9 times out of 10 immediately resolves all my clients' issues if they have problem eating meat specifically. It's like completely nighttime to daytime. And when I say solving issues, I don't mean taking a digestive enzyme. I mean healing their ability to create digestive enzymes. And there's a different process for healing stomach acid, and it's different than healing bile production. And there's a different process to heal pancreatic enzymes. And there's different labs and different ways to test which one of those things are low, or maybe it's two, or maybe it's all three of those you're not creating well. And so you need to go through different processes. By the way, this is what I put inside of my program, the Better Belly Blueprint, where you can learn how to heal your own body through lab testing. We get you wholesale pricing on, and through videos that I actually teach you how to analyze your own labs. Or again, if you don't want to do any of that, you can do our VIP support level where I do all of it for you. But I hand built that into my program because I wasn't seeing it being done anywhere. I never have a client come to me who said, yeah, my doctor or my holistic practitioner already did the exact same test and did the exact same protocol so my body can actually create its own digestive enzymes. Never has that ever happened to me. Probably because those people, if it is happening, they are not at my office. They are not listening to this podcast. They already feel a whole lot better. But that's not the only thing you're going to look at. So sometimes I get clients who say, I really don't feel good eating meat. But here's the thing. They also don't feel good on their current diet. And one of the problems is that plants are really high in three substances that are not inherently toxic, but if your body is not functioning optimally, you have low digestive enzymes, you have hidden pathogens, and you have leaky gut, which is what everybody has that. Like, if you're wondering if you have it, if you have bloating, if you have constipation, if you have diarrhea, if you have PMS, if you have headaches and migraines, if you have all these symptoms in your body that no one can get rid of, you have these problems. Then if you're eating plants because you've heard it's healthy, one of the problems is that plants are high in oxalates, they're high in salicylates, and they're high in lectins. And if you've never heard of these things, three things before, it's because all the plant and vegan people don't want you to know about it. But I'm going to share with you some podcast episodes I already have. I've actually really dug into oxalates because they are, of the three that I just mentioned, oxalates are the first most common problem clients are running into. So I have episode 148, the oxalate episode, episode 103, detoxing is not a green smoothie, where I talk about how green smoothies actually oxalate dump on you. It can make you feel worse. Episode 115, vegan, 4 reasons the vegan diet is making your IBS worse. I have these linked in the show notes, so don't have to worry about memorizing them. But that's a lot of oxalate support. And then the other words I used was salicylates and lectins. Salicylates is the second most common problem that I see clients dealing with of these three things, but at a significantly lower frequency, which is why I don't even have an episode on it yet. And then lectins are the least common problem. And it's usually like, if you're sensitive to a lectin, it might be one or two different types of plants lectins, but not every plant's lectins. Like, I'm sensitive to green pepper lectins, but not tomatoes, you know? So, and I actually have a test in the Better Belly Blueprint that tells you which lectins you're sensitive to, so you don't have to guess. And maybe it's none, and that's great. So these three things can cause huge problems for most of my clients. And again, it's worse when there's low digestive enzymes, hidden pathogens, and leaky gut. And when you eat meat, meat has none of these things. So, but again, you're going to be caught in this catch-22 where because your body's already not functioning well, it doesn't really matter what food you put into it, you feel poorly. So that gets you into this weird state of asking, what foods can I eat to feel good? I don't feel good on any food that I eat. I feel somewhat better when I eat the low FODMAP diet or do the elemental diet or do a liquid diet, but I don't know which diet it is for you. You know, maybe it's keto. You feel somewhat better on those diets, but it's clearly not perfect. And honestly, let's be real. The low FODMAP diet, for example, is a total pain in the butt and it doesn't actually heal anything. So if you're currently on the low FODMAP diet, it is a symptom that your whole body needs to be healed, not that you need a better diet. Cause let me tell you, the low FODMAP is not where it's at. So that is my little thing on meat. Meat is actually incredibly healing. It doesn't have a lot of things that can be aggravating to the body that vegetables have. And that it is cram-packed with an incredible amount of nutrients. And a really great example of I actually just like this, instead of giving you details, giving you a story, a really great example of how nutritious meat is that there are people who are currently doing something called like a carnivore diet, which means they only eat meat and they are thriving. There's a woman, some of you guys will know this name. Some of you won't know this name. If you know this name, it might come pre-charged for you. If you love her, you hate her, you like her dad, you don't like her dad. But Jordan B. Peterson's daughter, Michaela Peterson, she is on a, not just a carnivore diet, but I think she calls it the lion diet, which I believe means that she's only eating more beef, like red meat. I've seen her like eat beef, bacon, and steak. So it's even more specific to the carnivore diet. But she's very explicit that even though she's felt great on this, and she's actually had two kids on this diet, like one time that typical nutrition advice would say that women should be explicitly eating carbs is when you're pregnant. In general, most women are going to do better when they're eating some carbs, especially if they're menstruating. So I'm not saying go and do this diet. I'm not on this diet. It is not the perfect diet. But the reason Michaela Peterson is on this diet is because she has significant autoimmune problems that she has now discovered. If you've been following her, very fascinating to see her transparency that she recently has learned how much mold is a component to autoimmune diseases flaring. She's had an autoimmune disease, a very severe pediatric rheumatoid arthritis autoimmune condition since she was a child. And the only thing that has made it better has been the lion diet, where she actually has complete remission of her symptoms. And she is only eating meat, y'all. She's only eating meat. And she's currently exploring healing her body of mold. But what's fascinating is that ultimately, the reason she needs to be on this carnivore diet is not because meat is better than all other foods on the planet. It's because of a pathogen that has wrecked her body and caused her immune system to be totally out of whack. And that is something that, again, I deal with in the entire Better Belly Blueprint, is not just looking at what foods are healthy for you right now, you specifically, but also how to heal the entire container of your body so that when you put food into your container doesn't reject it. And again, that's not because of the food you're putting into it, it's because of the problem of your actual body. Let's heal your body. So that's my whole thing on meat, that there's people out there literally growing babies on a pure meat diet, no vegetables, no carbs. She's doing just fine. And she, it's not just her. There's a lot of people like her, but she is a very vocal person and a really great example of somebody who's on a full meat diet, which none of my clients are. None of my clients are on a full carnivore diet, but it's an example that you could be only eating meat and perfectly fine. Although she's sick, but not because of the meat. Let's be real. All right, so let's talk about fat, because that was the real question. She really wanted to know about fat. And so let's talk about some science on fat, and then this will help elucidate and give you the groundwork for understanding when is fat unhealthy, when is it not? Because again, it's not a blank slate. Fat is always bad. Don't eat fat. I actually, for me personally, I eat a very heavily fat and protein diet, more meat, more avocado, more like nuts. Nuts have some carbs in them. I'm not anti-carb. I'm not even trying to be anti-carb. I just feel better on diets that have higher protein and higher fat as a primary source of energy. And I stay away from grains just because grains are extremely bad for me. They're not bad for all my clients. And they might not be bad for you. But grains being rice, corn, quinoa, wheat, all my testing comes back. They're horrible for me, and I definitely feel better off of them. But that is also after I got rid of all my hidden pathogens in my body, woohoo, like parasites. So, but let's talk about fat. So fat, at its simplest, when we're talking about how it functions, it's a storage unit. And so fat, as long as what it is storing is mostly just carbs, calories, it's totally perfectly fine. In fact, fat can store extra nutrients. But one problem you can have if you're eating animal fat, if that animal was eating toxins, let's say that animal is eating food covered in antibiotics and glyphosate and herbicides and pesticides, which is what a lot of traditional meat is eating. So your cow that you ate, if it's not grass-fed and organic, they're typically going to be eating feed that is not grass. It is like an amalgamation of different grains like corn that have been sprayed just like any non-organic food sprayed with corn, and then the cow eats it, and throughout its life, however long that is, it's mainly eating this let's say just corn, though it's probably a mix of grains, this corn sprayed with herbicides, pesticides, antibiotics, and then it eats this, and then any extra toxin that cow's body doesn't know what to do with, it's going to put in the fat. And you don't know if that animal was healthy when it died. It could have had a cough. Like, I don't mean to be weird. Literally, you can actually see videos of animals in barns where they're being fed and grown, and then where they get killed. And these animals are not healthy. They have patches of fur falling off them because they're not seeing the sunlight. They're not walking around. They're not getting full levels of nutrients. They look and seem sick. And even though you can't tell that from the meat you're eating, all you see is the red meat with the whatever, you know, skin that's on it, or the fat around it, whatever that meat looks like. You see the meat, but you have no idea what that animal was doing. But the fat tells the story, and you still can't see it with your eyeballs. But when you go to eat that fat, if that animal was full of toxins, then their fat is full of toxins. So it actually becomes one of the most toxic part of an element. So if you're going to eat a piece of meat that's not grass-fed, and it's not organic, you do want to cut off as much fat as possible because it is going to have a higher level of toxins in it. But fat itself is super, super healthy for us as long as the fat is healthy. And so whether that's animal fat, that's, again, organic and grass-fed, I typically say eat as much of it you want, like grass-fed butter, eat as much as you want. In terms of my daughter eats lots of fat, I eat lots of animal fat. I don't cut the fat off of my meat if it's grass-fed or organic, and I have no problems having good weight. My cholesterol is totally normal. It's the other problems you're going to run into. Maybe if I was eating grass-fed meat and eating the fat and eating the meat, and then I was also eating gluten, which I am sensitive to, then that gluten exposure could actually increase dysfunction in my body, which could stress my liver, could make me have symptoms, make me feel sick, potentially give me things like high blood pressure, create imbalances in my sodium or in my salt and water balance in my body, give me leaky gut. And that has nothing to do with the red meat or the meat and the fat and the animal fat. It has everything to do with the gluten. So you don't want to say, just because I know I eat meat and I know I feel bad and people say meat is bad sometimes, I'll stop eating meat and that'll fix all my problems. That is overly simplistic and simplifying the problem. You want to know what's going on in your body. And so this gets to, I've already talked a bit about digestive enzymes. Same thing applies to fat. If you have low digestive enzymes, low stomach acid, low bile production, low pancreatic enzymes, then you will struggle more with fat. You might see fat in your stool. You'll get more gassy. And you'll even have symptoms of actually fat malabsorption, which can be chronic fatigue or brain fog, because one of the areas we have the highest concentration of fat in our body is our brain cells. Our brain cells are a huge portion of them is fat, and especially children need lots of fat growing up because their brains are growing so much. But if you cannot break down fat because you have low digestive enzymes, you suddenly can't transport fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin E. You know how many people are low in vitamin D, and then they take vitamin D, and then they can't get it to go up? Well, a lot of those clients also have problems with breaking down they're fat due to digestive enzymes, or they have poor fat assimilation, which is a totally another problem, totally different problem, and means you can, even if you can digest your fat, if you can't assimilate it and bring it into your cell, you can't access it. And that can also lead to problems like high cholesterol, sometimes low cholesterol, low triglycerides, and generally your cells won't work because your cell membranes are made of fat. And if you don't have enough fat in your body, your cell membranes become weak. They can't respond to thyroid hormone. You'll get all the symptoms of hypothyroidism, even if your thyroid levels are normal. You see how much we need fat and we need digestive enzymes, and you need something that's way, way more thorough than just don't eat this, do eat that, because everybody's different. Not just their history of their ancestors and where they came from, but also their current present bodies, you know, how well they digest or what foods they're sensitive to, or if they have a pathogen like mold or a parasite that they're exposed to, and that, of course, your doctor cannot find because they don't even have the right testing for it. If If any of this is resonating with you, I want to invite you to come book a one-on-one call with me or simply go the full route and join the Better Belly Blueprint. When you join the Better Belly Blueprint, you get two support levels that you can choose from, our standard and our VIP. Both of them are going to come with lifetime support via group coaching calls and our private Facebook group. Both are going to come with access to advanced functional medicine lab testing that you get at wholesale pricing. Both are going to get you the result of knowing exactly which foods to eat to feel your best without being on anything mega restricted and also while feeling amazing. But the difference is in the standard, you're going to go through a video online video library where I actually teach you how to analyze your labs, how to even know which labs to order. We give you access to ordering labs. You then analyze your lab. You create a custom protocol based on templates that I give you, and then you heal yourself. I educate you on how to do it every step of the way. And the Better Belly VIP, where I actually analyze your labs for you, I help you pick exactly which labs you need, and I create your custom health plan for you. So if you want to finally poop daily, ditch acid reflux, balance your hormones, and honestly just not worry about your health anymore, go to betterbellytherapies.com/blueprint or click the link in the show notes to join. You can join that standard level or our VIP level. And if you just want me to review everything in your health, go over current labs you have, and help you think through what your next step should be to find your healing pathway, Go to betterbellytherapies.com/unstuck and you can book a one-on-one unstuck session with me where we can comb through everything in your health history, your current labs, and help you get that breakthrough that you're looking for so you can know exactly what your next step should be. Go to betterbellytherapies.com/unstuck and you can book that call today. Well, that is everything that I had and wanted to say on meat and animal fat. I hope that makes sense that you don't want to villainize one food group. You want to have personalized health recommendations for your body with exactly what your body's going through. And the best way that you can do that, that I know of, is in the Better Belly Blueprint, working with me, getting to look exactly at what's going on inside of your body through the best and most specific, most in-depth lab testing that there is out there. Lab testing you cannot get through a conventional doctor. I want you to start finally feeling free in your health. So go to betterbellytherapies.com/blueprint if you're just ready to go the full route and join that today and get your answers, or book a one-on-one session with me by going to betterbellytherapies.com/unstuck. We can review what you currently have and see if the Better Belly Blueprint's right for you. And if not, I will give you the exact steps of what I think you should be doing and looking into next. So I hope you guys love this episode, and I'll catch you guys next week. Hey, friend, I hope you loved this episode. If you've been a fan for a while or newly loving this podcast, can you do me a favor? Drop into Apple Podcasts and leave me a review. When you leave a review, you do so much. You help me know you're listening. You can tell me what you're loving so I know what to make more of. And you help others by boosting this podcast so other people like you can find the podcast too. I mean, it's a win, 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 right? So if you want a way to pay it forward, just go to Apple Podcasts or click the link in my show notes and leave a rating and review. And if you want some more free stuff, just head over to my free Facebook group, betterbellytherapies.com/Facebook, and you can get access to all of my free support for you, including some Facebook group exclusive stuff like my podcast episode vault, where you can search the Better Belly podcast by topic and find exactly what you need to expedite your healing. I cannot wait to see you in there. Catch you guys next week.